Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up today, life underground. The Vatican museums reveal a newly discovered ancient Roman necropolis beneath Vatican City State. And music for everyone's ears. A Yale University professor is bringing to life centuries-old music manuscripts lying undiscovered in the Vatican Library. It's being called a Little Pompeii, but instead of an ancient city buried under volcanic lava and ash, it is a Roman-era necropolis preserved in great detail after a second-century landslide on what is now the Vatican hillside. Terracotta funerary urns, some with the ashes still inside, were discovered in the niches of burial chambers that once looked like little houses with tiled roofs. Altars and marble inscriptions illustrate the names and the trades of those buried there. A handful of elaborately carved marble sarcophagi holding the remains of patrician Romans, and skeletons found intact, some covered with what was once considered a luxury, but now we shudder to think of, a shroud made of asbestos that the Romans once used to preserve the body after death. The team of Vatican Museum experts who excavated the site even found glass-blown vases, oil lamps, talismans against the evil eye, and a pair of earrings.
Una scoperta forse tra le più importanti eseguite a Roma e in maggior modo in Vaticano in questi ultimi decenni.
Vatican Museum's director Francesco Buranelli calls the necropolis one of the most important discoveries made in Rome and in the Vatican over the last 50 years or so. But how did it first come to light?
Venuto alla luce durante gli scavi eseguiti nel 2003 in occasione della costruzione del nuovo parcheggio.
Buranelli explains that in 2003, Vatican officials came upon the first tombs when performing excavation work to build a new underground parking lot within the Vatican walls.
Circa 250 tombe dal primo al quarto secolo d.C.
Vatican excavators unearthed 250 tombs dating from the 1st to the 4th century AD, ranging from the time of the Emperor Augustus to Constantine. And though it's a burial site, Buranelli explains the finding gives a good overview of life in Imperial Rome and an indication of the passage from paganism to Christianity under the Emperor Constantine.
E soprattutto del graduale conversione della società romana dal paganesimo al cristianesimo.
But not only is the necropolis an astounding discovery, it is also unprecedented for Rome. Scholars are excited by the opportunity to see not how emperors and noblemen lived in ancient Rome, there are plenty of imperial tombs here that can show us that, but now they can see how the common man lived and the trades he practiced. Professor Paolo Liverani, the former director of the Vatican Museum's Department of Classical Antiquities, was responsible for unearthing and preserving the necropolis when digging started in 2003.
In Rome we have a lot of beautiful things, a lot of monuments of course, but in the necropolis of Rome usually we know the big mausolea of, for example, of Cecilia Metella on the Via Appia and similar monuments, but a normal necropolis of the common people is not possible to visit here in Rome. You have an interesting normal necropolis, for example, near Ostia in Porto, but not...
Which is on the coast,
yes,
just outside of Rome.
On the coast, yes. But in the city, or around the city, of course, because no tombs could be within the walls. This necropolis is the first you can visit as it was. With, of course, there are some damages, but it is very easy to understand.
What is easy to understand at first sight is how the necropolis was built into a hillside. Narrow walkways lined by rows of small chambers, some with carefully restored black and white floor mosaics of the gods, others with frescoed walls.
Quando si è abbassato il livello del terreno nell'esecuzione delle fondamenta, dello sbancamento per le fondamenta del nuovo edificio. Dopodiché abbiamo...
The Vatican team came across the ruins when preparing the sloping terrain for the foundation pillars of the new parking garage. Buranelli says his team of archaeologists, engineers, and restorers saved everything that was found. They restored burial structures and artifacts and preserved them on site.
Sulla tradizione di quanto venne fatto al tempo di Pio XII, i Musei Vaticani ripropongono non più una settore, una stanza dei musei dedicata a questa scoperta, ma si trasferiscono sul territorio.
By opening the site as a museum in and of itself, Buranelli says the Vatican museums are continuing in the path forged by Pope Pius XII, who carried out the excavation work under St. Peter's Basilica that led to the discovery of St. Peter's tomb. That early necropolis, which is open to the public by appointment, held the bodies of some of ancient Rome's first Christians as well as Roman pagans. So, does the newly discovered necropolis relate in any way to the other one found under St. Peter's Basilica?
Si tratta di due necropoli distinte, separate tra loro.
Buranelli says, though they're both found within the walls of Vatican City today, the two necropoli are separate and distinct from each other. Each was found along one of two of Rome's ancient consular roads that today cross Vatican City. The necropolis under St. Peter's was placed along the Via Cornelia running north. The recently discovered necropolis was located along the ancient Via Triumphalis, which linked the center of Rome to the old Cassia Way, leading north towards Viterbo. Both of the roads connected Rome to the Etruscan region in the north. It was down the Via Triumphalis that imperial troops would return to Rome, triumphant from their foreign battles, down to the city center, to the Forum, to the Theater of Pompeii, to the very place where Julius Caesar was killed. Journalist Tina Lepri was commissioned by the Vatican Museums to produce a video to document the painstaking recovery work carried out by Vatican archaeologists and restorers. She told me what images will most remain with her.
L'immagine di un bambino, o un piccolo bambino con una faccia serena, come se la morte.
The face of a child, she says, serene as if death was unwilling to grasp this child. A face that is alive and expressive, eternal throughout the centuries. Visitors, she says, can see the skeletons of an infant lovingly buried by his family, who left a bird's egg beside his body, a sign of rebirth and renewal. Also, the bones of children and adults, Lepre continues, and the painstaking care the Vatican restorers used in cataloging and studying them.
Tutto vorrei ricordare una cosa emozionante, ossia uno scenografo dell'imperatore che ha.
One of the most exciting finds, she says, was a tombstone for an imperial set designer bearing an image of the man wearing the dress of his trade and surrounded by the instruments of his job, a compass and a T-square. Here, too, you can see the tombstone of a Roman soldier whose hands are raised as if in prayer, a sign curators say that could well place him among Rome's earliest Christians. Their research on the necropolis has just begun. Looking further, Lepre says you can see tombs of Roman soldiers and horsemen, as well as those of the poor, who were sometimes known to invade an older tomb from some other family because they could not afford one of their own. But that's what makes this necropolis unique, Lepre says.
Uno dei segretari di Nerone, dell'imperatore Nerone, con un cavaliere che veniva chissà da dove per morire qui a Roma.
Here you have important dignitaries, like one of Emperor Nero's personal archivists, next to an unknown soldier, to a mailman, next to local people we have no hope of ever knowing. The wealthy, together with the poor, humble people whose intimacy is beautiful to behold, she says, in the very special way the tombs are presented to us.
Intimità, diciamo, della vita che la tomba racconta.
Can one visit the new archaeological museum? The director of the Vatican Museum says it's simple.
La visita sarà molto semplice dall'ingresso dei musei vaticani.
Visits can be arranged by appointment, with tours of up to 25 visitors on Fridays and Saturdays. But Buranelli says he expects to increase those visiting hours if the tours prove popular. Tickets, which cost 5 euros, can be reserved by writing to the Vatican Museum's Special Visits Department. The email address is visitespeciali.musei, that's M-U-S-E-I, at scv.va. Again, that's visitespeciali.musei at scv.va. You can also send a fax by dialing country code 39, then 06-6988-1573. It's one of the world's biggest and oldest libraries, and it's right here in Rome. The Vatican Library, founded in the 4th century, today contains more than 1.1 million printed books and 75,000 manuscripts, and those are separate from the vast Vatican archives containing hundreds of thousands of other items, coins and medals. It was Pope Nicholas V in the 15th century who formally refurbished the library. By the year 1481, it held over 3,500 items. Not much by today's standards, but back then it represented the largest collection in the Western world. Today it is housed in a prominent palazzo by the architect Domenico Fontana, who was commissioned for the job by Pope Sixtus V in the late 1580s. Among the many manuscripts, many in Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, but lots of other languages too, are musical scores by some of the world's finest composers. A Yale University music professor is now on a treasure hunt for some of those musical masterpieces, many of which haven't been taken out and dusted, so to speak, for centuries. Toshiyuki Shimada is the former conductor of the Portland Symphony Orchestra and music director of Trinity Music Partners. The Portland-based company has signed a licensing agreement with the Vatican Library to rediscover some of these works and make them available to music lovers the world over. I caught him between trips to the Vatican Library at his home in the U.S. state of Connecticut.
Think the history of a civilization, almost like an entire history of civilizations really kept in this library. You could really reference not only Catholic documents, but of course Hebraic and something from Africa and from Asia. And all those great documents are kept in the Vatican Library. I think that magnitude, huge collection from all over the world, that makes big difference.
What sort of musical manuscripts and by which composers can be found in the library?
This is what everybody asks me. I think that it's safe to say that the most of the Vatican Library's music collection, especially in the manuscripts, are from the Middle Age and the Renaissance period. And predominantly, of course, sacred music. Music which was performed actually in the Sistine Chapel or in St. Peter's. And those music are really kept very well and preserved in the library itself.
Would most of these manuscripts and musical scores, would they have been commissioned by the popes?
Usually, well, some of them, of course, are commissioned for some big occasion. Of course, the head of state from some other country comes in and commissions some kind of a special mass or something. The Pope did really request some of the composers or maestro di cappella in, for instance, Sistine Chapel or in St. Peter's to write some piece for that occasion. But mostly, I think the music manuscript in the Vatican libraries are from just the daily, weekly, and the yearly uses for, church services. I mean, any of those music was used predominantly in the masses.
I understand that you discovered in your research there at least one work that may never have been performed before, or at least for anyone outside except a pope.
Yes, I think I was looking through some pieces of a collection, and all of a sudden I found a very curious piece of music and manuscript, which is written, supposedly, by Alessandro Scarlatti. Usually Scarlatti writes any church music, he would put some instrumental accompaniment, but this is just a cappella for 4 to 5 voices. And I was just wondering about why, but it does say Alessandro Scarlatti in the manuscript, and also I was going through the other catalogs or compositional list for Alessandro Scarlatti, and it does list this Miserere Mei, Psalm 150. However, when I did some research about printed music of this or any recording or performance of this, it just doesn't exist. So at least in our time, it has never been performed or published.
That's rather exciting. Do you expect to find other unperformed pieces like this?
Well, we hope to really find really many of those works. So we continue our researches in Vatican Library, and it's such a wonderful place to be. But its collections are so huge, really, you have to spend a lifetime to, you know, search some pieces like the one I found by Alessandro Scarlatti, and I was pretty lucky.
Well, it sounds like it. What are you going to do with the material that you find? How are you going to organize it? I understand that you're going to, through this company that you're working with, you're going to try to organize it into a CD collection. Is that right?
Yeah, we have many ideas, of course. But what we'd like to do was, of course, permission of the Vatican Library, is that we like to make a CD of really significant music, or the music that has never been heard. Those music we think we should be in the CD, or we might do some DVD production, and also like to publish the music in more of a modern notation form, because most of these manuscripts and music are really in the old musical notation.
So would this music be available for public use then?
Yes, yes, yes. We'd like to really to offer to public, and so anybody could purchase it. And the agreement with, of course, our licensor, they're called 1451 and the Second Renaissance, which has, of course, the rights from the Vatican. Whatever we sell, percent of the proceeds will go back to Vatican Library. So, you know, it could help cataloging or all other works that they need.
Was it difficult to get permission from the Vatican to do this research and publish the music?
It was a process that, of course, it takes time. You have to, you know, obviously Vatican has to be very careful, of course, about copyrights and all the, of course, other things that they have to worry about. But we do have another license. I think it took about 1 year to negotiate, I think, for this. But right now, we are requesting some approval from Vatican for a couple projects. One is Easter project and Christmas, of course. It takes time. You know, some things, if they don't like, then we change it, and we really try to meet the Vatican's approval.
What would make your dreams come true?
My dream come true is to find some unknown manuscripts by, let's say, Mozart or Handel or Bach in the Vatican Library.
All right. Well, hopefully when I talk to you next time, you might have found something.
Maybe. I don't know. It's a really time-consuming work. But it's wonderful to be there. And, you know, just not only these collections, But the building itself is so beautiful, and it's just the whole complete atmosphere is really so inspiring. I think there are some scholars doing researches year-round, and they're pretty lucky. I wish I could do that too.
Looking for lost treasures in the Vatican libraries. Toshiyuki Shimada, Yale music professor and music director and creative officer for Trinity Music Partners. Keep tuned to this space in coming months. I'm looking forward to talking to Professor Shimada when he makes his next foray into the Vatican libraries. That brings today's program to a close. I'm Tracy McClure, thanking you for joining me for the last half hour. Tune in again tomorrow at the same time and on this same channel for the next English feature program, or you can hear us at any time of the day or night by clicking on our website. That's vaticanradio.org. Just look for the English service. Again, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.